This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to The Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Trey Orndorff, a political scientist at Oklahoma Christian University, and I am joined by the professor of law at Chase Law School. Ken, welcome to our ongoing midweek show on the Constitution.
It is great to be back.
Yeah, I have loved, you know, we continue to go through the Constitution. We've been through the entire text of the Constitution at this point, and now we've been making our way through the amendments to the Constitution, and the first 10 of them, what we call the Bill of Rights, and we're now halfway through the, well, we'll be halfway through this, Ken, today, as we take on the Fifth Amendment. And so what we do for each of these listeners is we start by taking a look and reading that portion of the Constitution and then going down into the details about it. And so, Ken, I'm sure you're familiar with this. This is probably more your area. The Fifth Amendment says the following, quote, "No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless a presentation or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in the actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be brought subject for the same offense to be put twice, to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation," end quote. So we just came off a couple of amendments that, right, I mean, one case in the history. There's a lot of Fifth Amendment litigation. And that's because, like many of the of our amendments, especially in the Bill of Rights, there's lots of these sub-pieces. And even as I'm reading that, you're probably hearing, like, there's a lot going on there. And so really, when you break the Fifth Amendment down, it's got a kind of an easy mnemonic here. You've got five rights or protections that are arising. And so to kind of summarize those for you, we have the right to a jury trial when you're charged with a crime. You have protection against double jeopardy. You have protection against self-incrimination. You have the right to a fair trial. And then finally, of course, fifth, the prosecution against the taking of property by government without compensation. And so what I think we're going to do is we're going to dive into the Fifth Amendment by drilling into each of those five component rights that emerge out of the amendment. And what all of this really is, I mean, if you just open up your intro level undergraduate textbook, these are all kind of rights of what you might call the criminally accused, things that you get in terms of cases or the possibility of the emergence of cases. And I thought we would start here, Ken, by taking a look at the jury trial, or the first portion of the Fifth Amendment, which is it's making it harder for someone to even be accused of a crime, or at least a certain type of crime. It requires that there to be a grand jury or a jury to even bring charges. And that has its roots in longstanding law, which heads all the way back to England and Henry II. And it therefore had a longstanding position in the unwritten British Constitution. And as a matter of fact, just a little historic note that I like to throw out. When it was introduced by Madison as part of what we now have as the Bill of Rights, it was the absolute only part to receive no recorded comment, debate, opposition, or change, which is just a fun little fact. So what makes these jury trials and the fact of needing a grand jury in some instances such a key, Ken? So tell us from that lawyer's point of view.
Yeah, well, first, I want to just recast one thing that you said. The right of a criminal defendant to have a jury trial is actually in the Sixth Amendment. That is a constitutional right, but it's not part of the Fifth Amendment.
Right, so here is the right.
The grand jury.
If you can't even have charges come against you at a certain level unless there's a kind of jury.
Right. Yeah. So a grand jury. So a grand jury is not a jury that presides over the case. The grand jury is a different jury that decides whether to bring charges in the first place. So they find that there's probable cause to charge somebody with a crime, and then they issue an indictment. And that is actually a secret proceeding. That's not a public proceeding. So that's the opposite of the regular jury trial, which has to be a public trial. Grand juries operate in secrecy. A couple of things that you said, which are true and interesting, are you noted that this was the one that was one of the primary grievances against the King of England, that he would have people arrested without any citizens intervening to decide whether the person had committed a crime. And it was very important to the framers. There was uniform agreement on it. They thought it was super important. They put it first in the Fifth Amendment of all the rights that are in the Fifth Amendment. They gave it pride of place, and they spent the most words on it. The grand jury clause, has like three or four commas in the middle of it because it's a very long sentence.
Whereas, I stumbled a couple of times. Yeah.
And so all of that is interesting in light of the fact that it's the one that has been almost completely useless in the course of American history.
Well, we talked about that a little bit last time, right?
Yeah.
In the fact that my criminal procedure professor often talked about it in terms of you could indict a hand sandwich to a grand jury, I think is the way that he kind of put it.
Yes, that's one of the two reasons it's been completely useless. So the way the grand juries actually function in criminal procedure is the prosecutor gets to talk to them. Nobody else does. Grand juries have subpoena power. They can subpoena witnesses and bring witnesses before them if they want to. Generally, they wouldn't even know who to subpoena or what to ask them unless the prosecutor fed them that information. They can subpoena the defendants, although who at that time are suspects. They're not defendants yet. Typically, the prosecutors would discourage them from doing that because the suspects would be allowed to claim the other Fifth Amendment right against compelled self-incrimination.
Yeah.
So they'd
we'll
be able to take the Fifth and not answer the questions. And then they would just be tipped off that this investigation is going on. And so typically grand juries, do basically do what the prosecutors suggest that they do. And if the prosecutors ask for an indictment, they usually give it. And that was your thing about indicting a ham sandwich. So that's one of the reasons it's been a not very important clause. The other reason it's been a not very important clause is because unlike most of the other constitutional rights we have in the Bill of Rights, the grand jury indictment right is not commonly found in state constitutions. Most state constitutions don't have it in their constitution. Some that do only have it for capital crimes, so it wouldn't apply in most cases. And so, as state criminal practice developed, and most crimes are committed under state and local law and prosecuted by local prosecutors.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I think that you can't overestimate that. And it's always a fact that shocks students when we cover this, right? 98% of all cases are state when you're talking about criminal cases. It's almost everything. So when you say, Ken, most of them, that's almost an understatement. It's all of them with maybe a couple of exceptions is the way you might want to think about, not you personally,
right.
But when those listening to think about.
Yeah. And so what I was going to get to here is that, we talked in earlier about how the various rights that are in the Bill of Rights, the Supreme Court mostly has applied them against states as well, and mostly has, they use the phrase incorporation. They've incorporated the rights in the Bill of Rights and made them apply against states. But the grand jury, because there was really only a minority of states that ever used it, and the Supreme Court didn't think it performed a very important function, since usually prosecutors can get the indictments that they want anyhow. So the Supreme Court has not required states to use grand juries. It has not incorporated the Fifth Amendment right to grand jury indictment against the states. And that means that the majority of states where that's not required by their own constitution, it's not required that they use grand juries to issue indictments. And as you pointed out, Trey, 98% of crimes that are prosecuted in state courts. So it doesn't apply in most cases. In the cases that it does apply, it doesn't do that much. Probably the handful of situations where the grand jury indictment clause is relevant, I think, it is relevant typically in cases where police officers or other law enforcement officers are accused of having committed crimes. Because most prosecutors have to work very closely with law enforcement, they never want to seem too aggressive in coming after police, but sometimes they do have to do that. And I think, you know, prosecutors are very likely, you know, in cases where a police officer is accused of something, to, you know, present the issue to the grand jury and not really give them the same kind of guidance that they would give in other cases, and just say to the grand jury, you know, here's the evidence that have been obtained in the investigation, and you know, you decide whether you think this officer should be charged.
That's trying to push it in that direction. Yeah. But now, yeah. Before you keep on that thought, I'm unfortunately going to have to end our ad-supported preview right there. So, you know, again, I hate to have to stop Ken and myself from talking about the Fifth Amendment. But if you want to continue to be a part of this conversation, and I really hope you do, because it's going to give you access not just to this Fifth Amendment show, but to all of the Constitution shows that we've had. They're all there waiting for you as a supporter. And so that means at this juncture, I'm going to suggest it might be time for you to head to patreon.com/politicsguys and unlock the rest of this episode, plus so many other episodes on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights shows. It's just an immense amount of content there. And it's just for dollars a month, you can have access to that by heading to patreon.com/politicsguys. But of course, there's other advantages too. We were talking about on the weekend show, our very active Discord group, and so much more. I would love for you to be a part of the Politics Guys team by heading to patreon.com/politicsguys. And for just a few dollars a month, unlocking this and so much more content that is simply not able to be available for free. So if there's other ways, you can, of course, support the show to get access to this ad support, or excuse me, to this show. And that is through Venmo, where we're at Politics Guys. We're also on PayPal. All of those support links are in the show notes, as well as at politicsguys.com/support. So head to patreon.com/politicsguys to get the rest of this midweek show. If you're not in a position to financially support the podcast, I get that. Please just reach out at mail@politicsguys.com and we can get that set up. Now, whether or not you're a supporter, we'd really love it if you'd subscribe, rate, and review this episode on whatever podcast app you use. If you've got a question, comment, correction, gripe, or anything else you'd like to share, don't forget we're always checking that mailbox at mail@politicsguys.com. We're also on Facebook and X, and you'll find all of this and so much more in the show notes. The executive producers of the Politics Guys are Bruce Johnson, Wilma Marino, Daniel Toe, Ryan Beasley, and Don Oglesby. We'll be back with a new episode weekend. I hope you'll join us.